Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. I have a wonderful guest joining me by the name of Christine Lang. Christine is a medical intuitive, spirit channel, healer, and author with over 25 years of experience helping clients through private sessions and classes. As an attorney, Christine experienced constant stress, of course, which resulted in constant allergies, and her personal struggle with stress-related allergies led her to seek a holistic path to healing. After discovering relief through homeopathic remedies and through energy healing, she connected with her spirit, gaining profound insights into her health, relationships, and career. Her upcoming book, Ask Your Spirit, Receiving Life-Changing Wisdom from Your Elevated Intelligence, provides a roadmap for readers to tap into their own spiritual guidance. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm glad to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
So I want to hear all about this homeopathic journey. You know, you're an attorney, and for me personally, that means you rely more on logic and evidence-based, you know, materials. So homeopathy seems like a bit of a deviation from, you know, Western medicine. So I'm curious, like, you were having allergies, and what was your exploration, you know, of healing? What did that look like for you?
So I was raised, you know, very traditional, Western medicine is king, always, you know, take a pill for whatever ails you. And when I was in my second year of law school, I developed these awful allergies, just walking around with a box of tissues. I always looked like I had a cold. It was very attractive. No. And it was before the days of Zyrtec and the things they have now that are the allergy meds that are 24 hours that don't make you drowsy. So back then my options were take Benadryl and drink Diet Coke all day to stay awake to counteract it, or just blow my nose and sneeze constantly. So those are my two options. So I went to law school each day with one of those two options. And by the time I graduated law school, I'd had it. I'm like, there's got to be something else in what was then called alternative medicine. And I was not into the airy-fairy, right? As that lawyer, I wanted everything very logical. And homeopathy at least is very logic-based for me. So it appealed to me because you could chart out your symptoms, you could map out the different remedies and go, okay, these things match. And there was a real logic to it. And I worked with homeopathy. I studied it in a study group for the public and got really proficient working with homeopathic remedies, probably got rid of 50, 60% of my allergies. Enough that it really got my attention. I started teaching study groups for the public, for the National Center for Homeopathy, because I was so impressed. And that really was the trail of breadcrumbs that my spirit led me on. And I made the, after I, you know, had this remaining allergies, I'm like, okay, let me look for links. And I noticed when I'm more stressed, the allergies are worse and you can't eliminate all stress. So I started doing yoga and Tai Chi, and that led me to study Taoism and Buddhism and start meditating, all these things to mitigate my stress in this very general way. My Tai Chi instructor taught me Reiki to do some energy healing. And I would say to my friends, well, before I offer you an energy treatment, let me get home, take off my lawyer suit and meditate just to change channels in my brain from aggressive lawyer to soft healer. And it was a sort of changing gears. And when I would do that, I would just know something about my friend and her symptom that I shouldn't know. I had no logical way of knowing it. So the first couple of times I kept it to myself, and then I finally got brave and said to my friend, you know, did you have an argument with your husband about buying a new car? And her eyes flew open and she's like, how do you know that? That literally happened last night. I'm like, I don't know how I know that. So, and she, you know, and her headache went away and her backache went away. And the next time it happened, I told a different friend, you know, I kind of got this impression of this when I was meditating before you came over. And she said, who are you talking to? And I was like, good question. And I went back upstairs after she left and sat down in my meditation chair. And when I raised my energy up, my spirit, this voice said, welcome home. And tears started streaming down my face. And I just felt all this love flood through my body. And she said, this is who you came here to be. Get ready. And I was like, get ready. And so I would sit in meditation for 3 or 4 hours a day And my spirit would just dictate stuff. This is the image I'm going to show you if somebody's lungs are compromised. This is the image I'm going to show you when somebody's liver has congestion. And these are the emotional traits that go along with diabetes. And these are the emotional traits that go along with chronic fatigue. And I just was furiously taking notes. And my friends got better and they told their friends. And all of a sudden I had strangers in my living room asking me to give them treatments, and a practice was born. And that was 30 years ago.
Wow. So I have a number of questions, but for people who aren't familiar with homeopathy, can you define that in case, you know, they're wondering what this
sure.
is?
Sure. Yeah, homeopathic medicine is an energy-based type of medicine, and it's created by taking a substance. So, and for example, there's a plant called hypericum, and it has certain properties to it that affect people's nerve endings in a soothing way. And when they take that plant and they grind it up in a little mortar and pestle and they put it in water and they shake it until the water mimics the molecules of the plant. And then they take a couple drops of water and they put it in another test tube, fill it with water, and then they shake it until all of the water has the same properties. And they do that repeatedly. It'll be 10 times, 100 times, until there's nothing left that's a material dose of the plant. It's just the water, but the water has the memory. And they take those water droplets and they drop it on little sugar pellets. And when you put those sugar pellets under your tongue, you're sending your body a message, much like acupuncture, that is energetic in nature. And the body, it's a suggestion. The body either says, hey, great idea, we should move our energy in that way. Or the body says, that doesn't even make any sense. This person doesn't even have a heart problem. We don't need that. And it ignores it. So it is deemed risk-free, and it's why it has FDA approval. The FDA is like, we don't get it, but okay. There's nothing here that could hurt you. There's no drug interaction because there's no material dose. The Queen of England still maintains a homeopath on staff, has since the like 1600s. The Dalai Lama has works with a homeopath. So there's lots of different places all over Europe where you can buy homeopathic remedies in the pharmacy. It's considered a pharmacology remedy. In the US, you can order them on Amazon. You can, you know, buy them in certain drugstores. It's a great low risk way to start working with yourself. I used it when my two boys were babies. We used mostly homeopathic remedies. If they got a horrible ear infection, I'd put them on antibiotics and use homeopathy to mitigate the effects of the antibiotics. But they're great. And they're real natural because it's a suggestion to the body of how to correct itself.
Mm-hmm. That's very fascinating. So, okay. So again, as an attorney, when you were trying to find an alternative way to heal yourself, what were your initial beliefs during that time? Like, were you really open-minded? You know, did all
not really
very strange? No,
very strange. No, I mean, I always say by the time, you know, I was raised Catholic, but by the time we get out of law school, we were taught to worship money and power and nothing else. That was, you know, I went to a top 10 law school. It was very cutthroat. And so I was very male energy domineering type of approach to everything. So I wanted to conquer my allergies. I wanted to battle them, right? And I was like looking for the remedy that would battle my allergies. And eventually I learned to work with the body and respond to what my body was telling me. So like I said, homeopathy got rid of a portion of my allergies enough that I had some relief, and I was meditating and my spirit started talking to me. And she said, I want you to see the link. It's not just when you're stressed, you have more allergies. It's a particular type of stress. And it is when you put pressure on yourself that is unrealistic and unhelpful. So when I had this really negative, toxic self-talk, I would literally become allergic to my own thoughts, allergic to my own self-talk. And as my spirit started working with me over the next 6-8 months, my allergies got better and better, and my self-talk transformed. So by the end of it, let's say 8 months later, the inside corner of my right eye would itch. And if I ignored it, I would start sneezing. But if I caught it right then, I would say, okay, what was I just thinking? Oh, yeah, I was just telling myself that was dumb. That was unprofessional. You shouldn't have said it that way. And then my body gets this response. So by the end of it, I had completely transformed my negative self-talk and gotten rid of my allergies. And now I live in the Southeast, and the whole, you know, in the spring, everything's covered in yellow pollen and everybody's sneezing except me. And they're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't have allergies. My body just totally gets it now. Like, that's foreign. This is just pollen. And so there's that wisdom that you can give to your immune system that makes you feel like, okay, I'm in conversation with my body. And That's my big message to people, is that your chronic symptoms are so often a gift. It's a gift in crummy wrapping paper at first, for sure. But when we learn to work with those symptoms and figure out the message, it is a way that your body and your spirit are trying to help you live this more peaceful, gentle, expanded version of yourself, this better life that has you, you know, enjoying things you never imagined enjoying.
Right. So when you were first hearing these messages from your spirit, were you, you know, shocked? Did you take it seriously? Did you doubt it? I mean, what was your initial response? Because I think people who try, you know, meditate and they try to tap in and hear their inner voice and the wisdom that it carries, they think they're just making it up. I think that's a common, you know, a common thought, a common belief.
And
what did it sound like for you?
It comes in those, that voice, I would say your spirit sounds like you, but nicer, right? Because normally when we hear a voice in our head, it's like, ugh, you forgot your glasses in the other room, right? There's a little bit of disgust with it. And when you hear your spirit, there's never disgust. There's never impatience. There's a softness. So if I were to channel your spirit, it would sound similar to you, but like the softest version of you. Right? Because there's no ego present. There's no irritation present, no fear there. And so, yeah, when it first came in, I just thought, oh, I'm just making this up. But then, and that's why in the beginning, I didn't even mention it to my friends. And then I'm like, wait a minute, why would I keep hearing, I would usher it away like any other thought in meditation, and it would drift back in such a soft way that it felt comforting, even though it was telling me about my friend having an argument with her husband, it felt comforting. I'm like, this is odd. And it was strange enough that I mentioned to my friend, and when she was shocked that it was accurate, then that gave me the courage to mention it to the next friend. And I'm like, okay, three times in a row now, I've heard these things. And I would have to distinguish between the images and words that came from my spirit versus my own conscious mind.
Yeah.
And I realized that the stuff that comes from our spirit, there's a softness to it. It floats in as this gentle truth, even if it's something I don't want to hear, like you're going to have to quit that job, or that friendship is done, or you've got to make boundaries. There's still a softness to it that makes you kind of sigh into it. And when a message comes in from my ego mind, it comes in like an arrow, and there's urgency to it. You didn't call that guy back, and you got to send a better email. And you know, there's always a little fear behind it.
Right.
And so that's how I learned to distinguish. And it's how I teach students to distinguish it. And once I started playing around with this, a friend of mine at the bank where I was in-house counsel, she wasn't in the legal department, she was in marketing, and she handed me this book, and it was by Brian Weiss. It was called Many Lives, Many Masters. Mm-hmm. Old classic, right? It was about this psychiatrist, for those of you who don't know, the psychiatrist who puts a woman under hypnosis who's having trouble with choking spells, and she goes back and discovers a past lifetime, and he learns about it at the same time she does, this whole idea of past lives and how you have, you know, spirit guides. And my friend handed me this book, and I said, what is this? And rolled my eyes. She's like, don't even roll your eyes. Just don't even say anything. Just read it for me as a favor. And I went home and I started reading it, and I stayed up till like 1 a.m. and I read the whole thing through.
Wow.
And I was just like, I could feel it in my body. This is true. This is a thing. And so when I started hearing messages, I already knew, like, there's a spirit world and they're ready to help. Right. And then I just felt blessed that I got tapped into that. So I know, again, that timing of all of that, just that perfect synchronicity set up.
Definitely. So how would you, okay, I'm sure you teach this to people, but what did it look like when you first started having more conversations with your own body for self-healing? And, you know, how would you help somebody get started when it comes to that?
Okay. So the first thing I'm going to say, because people are going to ask you this, on my website, there, if you sign up for the email list, there is a free guided meditation that walks you through having a conversation with your body to get messages, because it's the number one thing I'm asked most often. So I just made it and put it up there. So you can go to my website, christinelang.org, and you'll get that guided meditation. And it walks you through bringing your awareness to the area that's asking for attention, the hurt shoulder, the hurt knee, the, you know, bladder pain, the whatever it is, and being present and listening in a way that has you really be open to know what's being stored there. Because most symptoms, your doctor will say, if it's a chronic symptom, well, stress will make it worse. It's not that helpful, because you can't get rid of all stress. So how do you know which is just an aggravation because your neighbor's a pain in the rear, and what is really the stress that is causing your neck pain, right? And when you can distinguish it down, like, oh, this is about this stress, the recurring argument I have with my sister, this is where I store that stress. Invariably, once you get clarity about what that stress is about, you also start getting ideas from your body, from your spirit, about how to resolve it. Right? You don't have to be channeling at my level to start getting whispers of, oh, I need a boundary. Oh, it needs to be around this. Oh, this is how we can work with that.
Right. And I wanted to kind of swing back to something you talked about earlier, which was self-talk and how damaging it can be, or at least like the impact of your inner, you know, conversations or your inner critic and how that shows up as issues like in your body.
Yeah, I think so often when we have chronic symptoms, whether it's immune systems, which is, I think immune issues is how it shows up most often, because I think we are literally allergic to how we talk to ourselves. We wouldn't talk to our friend the way we talk to ourselves, right? We would never say it out loud, like the stuff that I was saying in my head, how dumb I was or whatever. And I think we have to sort of have a way to chronicle that, right? To see it. And our body gives us that. It's like the bulletin board that all those nasty messages get taped on. And then so you have a way of referencing, oh, wow, I have really been kind of plowing myself under with this negative self-talk. And most people say, oh, it's not that bad. I don't do it that bad, because they don't hear it and they just lose an awareness of it. And the body sort of keeps score for you in a loving way, not in a retaliatory way. Because when you do start transforming that, you live so much differently, right? Your income invariably goes up. Your relationships get better, right? Your body gets healthier. Your immune functioning goes up. All those things happen. So of course your body's invested in getting you there.
It definitely is. And so where would you, I mean, I hear a lot of people don't like positive affirmations. Let me put it that way. You know, people poo-poo it. They're like, oh, don't talk to me about affirmations. So how do you begin to change the conversation you're having with yourself about yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I'm one of those people who poo-poo affirmations. A big insert eye roll here, like, oh, right. And it, because it's such a prescriptive should, like it just felt too airy-fairy, again, to the lawyer part of me. And the way my spirit and my guides tend to coach me and my clients is you do it as a series of stepping stones. So if your negative self-talk is, I'm so stupid, I always forget things, right? Can you find something that is also true, but is a little bit nicer? It doesn't have to be the affirmation of, I'm so brilliant, and because nobody believes it anyway, right? If you're over here saying you're stupid, nobody's going to believe you're a genius, right? You're not going to, and that's why I think affirmations don't work. It's too big of a leap. But if you stepping stone it away, if you say, well, what else is true that is kinder, but is also true? You can say, sometimes I forget things, but I also get a lot of things right. So I used to have a story of, I have a terrible memory, because it took me forever to memorize Spanish words. I would like fail every other quiz in high school because I could not memorize. Memorizing is not my best thing. And so when I started seeing a bunch of clients, and as my email list grew and I had more and more clients, I started, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't remember all these people's names and I'm forgetting things. And my spirit said, you have almost 10,000 people in your email list. No one remembers 10,000 names. Like, you have a totally unrealistic standard because you're looking at a snapshot each day. So what if you said, I meet thousands of people every year. It can be tricky for me to remember. I actually do a pretty good job of remembering the 20 people I meet each week. And when I started saying that, my memory got better, because it became this self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm like, I actually remember a lot of people's names and I remember key elements of their story. So if you sign on for a session with me, and I had a session with you 3 years ago, when I see your face and I remember your energy, I'm like, I don't remember your name, but I remember you have two kids and a schnauzer, right? And I'll remember two elements of your story, because women especially, we relate in terms of story, not the facts, right? That's that male part of the brain. Right. And so when I recognize, oh, here's where my strengths are, and I acknowledge myself for those, my memory itself improved in that I made space for that and it got better and better. And now I can say, I actually have a really good memory and I remember the things that are most important to people. Right? They want me to remember the toughest. I can usually remember the toughest part of a client's journey, the biggest challenge they've had, the biggest win they've had in the last year, and the key things that they're worried about with their kids. Right? That's more important than if your name is Sheila or Catherine. It just is. I can look down at my you know, little calendar app and go, oh, it's Catherine, right? But that inching away step by step of like, what is also true, but a little kinder?
Yes.
Right? Because even like with one of your kids or your friend, you get aggravated with them because they've run back in the house three times and you just want to leave. And you're not going to say, you're so stupid, you forgot your glasses. You're gonna say, okay, what's a nicer thing I could say? And it's just starting that same practice with yourself and then increasing it and getting nicer and nicer, because you recognize as you speak kinder, you move into that space of being. You are a more expanded version of yourself because you feel safer. You're not going to have that harsh criticism, right? They show all the studies of kids who learn math so much faster when they're encouraged instead of criticized. And just taking that same principle. I want to have a better memory. So my point of policing myself and going, oh, you have a terrible memory, was somehow to shame myself into being better, which has never once worked, but we all do it out of habit. And when I could coax myself into acknowledging how I was doing well with my memory, I expanded the how I use my memory, and it got better and better and better.
Wow.
Right?
So you were speaking about many lives, many masters. There's a few, I mean, there's a lot of similar books on the market now, but I remember reading Journey of Souls some years ago, and sometimes I, you know, revisit that book as well. And I remember some stories wherein, I'll just use the word like the patient, even though it's not the patient, had, some chronic illnesses, and sometimes they were tied to past lives. But in other cases, I remember reading where the illness was here as a teacher for that individual. So I wonder, in those cases, do you think that they're able to modify the level of, I'll just say, pain, you know, of that symptom that they're supposed to, or that chronic illness that they're supposed to experience this lifetime? Or is it something that can be healed? I kind of wonder about that sometimes.
Yeah, I will say there's very few cases that I get where the symptoms are related to a past lifetime. And when that occurs, because wait a minute, the universe is perfect, so why is that occurring? We call that a past life bleed through, right? So it comes, some little element of that past lifetime bleeds through. When that occurs, it's because there's a gift, an ability you had in that lifetime that you want in this lifetime. So for instance, I had a woman who had weird shoulder pain. No doctor could figure it out. She'd been to a million different people. And when I saw her on Zoom, I was like, oh, I could see the arrow. I could see she was a Native American. I could see when it happened. And I'm like, why is this happening? And they said, this woman was an amazing equestrian in that lifetime. And she wanted that ability in this lifetime. And I said, what do you own a horse barn? And then she's like, no. And I'm like, all right, maybe I heard that wrong. And I go to ask her spirit, and her spirit said, ask her what her favorite hobby is. And I said, what's your favorite hobby? She goes, oh, I ride hunter and jumper horses. I show, I compete, it was all the stuff. And I was like, okay, well, now that you're at this championship level, I feel like we can close off that lifetime because you own those abilities now. They've come into your body, you've experienced them. And so we sort of shut the door on that lifetime because she had mastered this in this lifetime. And within a week, her shoulder pain was gone. But she already had those. I would not have been allowed to close that door 8 years earlier when she was just learning to ride.
Yeah.
And she was still pulling through that ability. I've had people who were great orators in other lifetimes come through. And so, but I would say in 30 years of a practice, it's probably happened 10 times. It's super rare, right? And there's a reason for it. It's not just, oh my gosh, this past lifetime is haunting me, right? It's the universe is more perfect than that. So most of the time, when you have a chronic symptom, absolutely, you can heal it by understanding both the physiological end, which we ask people's spirits, like, okay, is there a certain supplement to take or med to take? Or am I, you know, do I need a better mattress and that's why I have back pain, right? I want to do the practical part as well. And then we go into the emotional part. What is the emotional block to healing? Most of the time, I am not people's first stop, right? First of all, it takes forever to get a session with me. But by the time they get to me, they're like, I've tried everything, right? I'm like, okay, great. Bring me what you got.
Yeah.
So we can rule that stuff out. But so something like stomach issues. Okay. Stomach issues frequently have to do with how we talk about ourselves to ourselves. Mm-hmm. That self-consciousness, right? Think a little kid going out in the school play and having butterflies in their stomach, right? Just amplify that times 10. And it's, oh my God, I look stupid at work. Oh, I shouldn't have said that in the presentation. Oh, my slides weren't right in that thing at work, right? So when we have this constant sort of examining of ourselves and worrying about how we're being perceived, we can have chronic stomach issues, whether that we think they're food allergies or intolerances or whatever. So often when I work with clients and we start getting them to examine how often they're looking at themselves through this critical lens or worrying about how they're being perceived, and they settle that down with coaching from their spirit, their stomach issues go away. And they're still eating the same foods. I'm not a big proponent on super restrictive diets. I just don't They usually aren't necessary. It's fine in the beginning, right? Till you get things under control. But my goal is get you back to eating what you want, right? Probably not Doritos, but I mean, eating healthy foods and eating what you want. And so, because I think our job is to figure out what does the body need to heal and be able to function at an optimal level. So clients with low back pain, that's chronic, right? Again, people who said, I've tried everything. I still have low back pain, comes and goes. Can't really figure out why. What we usually track it down to is some way that you feel disempowered, which is usually a relationship. It could be a relationship at work, the guy that always takes credit for your work, or the boss that, you know, she's a mean manager, or inner family dynamics that are really stifling, right? The mom that's super critical, the dad that's never happy with anybody. But figuring out where do you get disempowered, right? And where you feel like you have no power. The quintessential moment of disempowerment is a cop pulls you over. You got no power there, right? It's whatever he's doing, that's what's going to happen. But that feeling of complete powerlessness, some people experience that multiple times a day at work or in their relationship or with their teenage kids, or all of that gets stored in that part of the body, right? So being able to kind of play detective on that and start to work that through, that's not just stress will make your back pain worse. It's what are the specific two or three kinds of stress that you store in that place in your body? That's a smaller list we can work with.
Definitely. And what about the role of your emotions in, like, what role do your emotions play when it comes to your chronic symptoms?
It's huge. I mean, I would say feelings are the language of the soul. So when people say, well, why does my spirit speak to me through symptoms? I'm like, well, she was speaking to you first through feelings. Right. But in our culture, we're taught to like push those feelings down in the body and get to them later. And later usually never comes, right? We just keep on being productive, being highly performative. And we don't really sit and sort through those awkward moments we had that day, that frustration we had with ourselves. And so those unexamined, unhealed emotions and feelings get stored in the body. And when they accumulate, think of it like a stack of papers or a stack of books that you've got over in the corner. When it gets too high, your body lets you know by giving you a symptom.
Right. And what do you say to people who, and I'm sure you've come across this so many times, just have such a hard time believing that you actually can heal yourself? You know, a lot of people consider that woo-woo, unrealistic, and there's a lot of resistance to this. So, you know, what do you say when you come across people who are extremely skeptical, but they're still coming to you because it's like, you're the last hope. I've tried everything else, you know, I've gone to all these specialists and spent all this money and I'm willing to do anything, but they're still skeptical.
I always say, bring your healthy skepticism, because that's the lawyer in me. I'm like, the proof needs to be in the pudding. If I can't do it, I would say, see me once. If you're not feeling substantial difference, don't come back, right? And because I'm that confident in what I do, and not because I'm so brilliant, because I'm tapping into what is true. Your spirit's going to tell me what's true for you. I'm a good translator. I'm a good healer only because I'm a good translator, right? So at the end of the session, when I'm putting energy healing work in somebody, it's a small part of what's happening. 90% of the healing occurred during the time where I'm just channeling your spirit. And I'm just sitting here being the translator, and people say, well, then ask my spirit why this. And you know, her spirit always, well, remember last year when you got fired and you blamed blah, blah, blah. She's like, oh yeah. Right. And so we put together this chain of events that's sort of undeniable. And, you know, people will say, okay, tell me the name of my first dog. I'm like, no, I'm not doing parlor tricks. I'm not here to impress you as a psychic. Right. But invariably that will happen during a session where people are like, oh my gosh, you're right. I did say that last week. Or my mom always said that phrase to me. Or, and that awareness comes within the session where people go, oh, that is my spirit, because Christine doesn't have any way of knowing that, right? And I always say, bring your healthy skepticism, because you know what happens to people who don't believe in gravity? They stick to the earth anyway, right? It is what it is. It's just energy's out there and this works. And so if you don't believe, it doesn't harm me at all when people don't believe. I just go, okay, right? And I also believe that souls evolve. And if you're interested in this stuff, if you're somebody's listening to your podcast, they're an older soul. So if we think of things like kindergarten through 12th grade, these are high schoolers who are listening to your podcast. They've lived hundreds of lifetimes already. So they already have memories of this. I'm just reminding them. You're just reminding them of what they already know. And they're like, oh yeah, that's right. But it's like we're talking calculus. But if you go to the playground at the elementary school and you pull a third grader out and you say, let me tell you about doing math, it's called calculus, and you do it with symbols. And they're like, no, I learned my times tables last week. You have to have numbers, and you always can do math with numbers. And we're like, no, kid, you can do math with symbols. I am not going to convince that third grader, nor should I.
Yeah.
So when people come to me and they go, I don't believe you do, I go, okay, you will. It might be 100 lifetimes from now. I don't care. It doesn't matter, right? I don't need the third grader to be in ninth grade. Exactly. My job is to treat the people who come to me. And once my spirit got that through to me, and I no longer felt defensive about it, and I no longer felt self-conscious, I have yet to meet somebody in the last 5 or 6 years who doesn't believe in what I do. Because like attracts like. And so by magnetic principles, those people just, they never ask me about what I do. They're not in my orbit. I had a guy sit next to me in like full colonel uniform on a plane. And he says, so what do you do? And I thought, oh boy, you don't want to know what I do. Yes. And so I gave a very evasive answer. I think I said, well, I work in alternative medicine and I teach meditation. And he kept pushing. And he's like, well, tell me more. And I'm like, all right, dude, he said, well, like what? And I said, well, like if somebody has an injury. And he goes, well, like what? And I'm like, well, like it, let's say your left knee hurt. Cause I could see there was red energy around his left knee. And he goes, how do you know my left knee hurts? And I said, well, I see this red energy. We ended up in a 3-hour conversation. And when we got off the plane, he walked up to me and said, can I have your card? I said, yes. And you will probably never call me because you will walk away. And by the time we go down and get our luggage, you will have rationalized in your head, it was just a fluke that I guessed about your knee. And you will have to, you know, make your world right again. And you'll probably forget about it. And he goes, I probably will, but I want your card to remind me of this conversation. And I said, okay. And I call those planting seeds. So even when somebody comes into my orbit now who says, I don't think I believe, they invariably ask a bunch of questions. And I actually have had a couple of those people years later call me up and say, okay, my brother died. I'm wondering if you know a good medium that I could talk to him. I'm wondering if you can give me that. So I plant the seeds as I'm asked.
Love that. I wonder also, since you were telling me that, you know, you have conversations with your body for the messages, but also as you work with people, you have your guides. At what point were you introduced to these specific guides? And is this something that, let's say I began my own homeopathy journey, that I should be expecting encountering to get additional information, like higher level teachers in my spirit? I'm just curious about the role that they play or what people should expect when they go on this journey themselves, what that looks like for them.
What I teach my students in my energy healing series is always talk to your spirit first, because if you just kind of open up to the spirit world, it's like playing with a Ouija board. It's like, whoever's here, I want to talk to you. And it could be, you know, Miss Mabel down the street who died last week at 85.
Yes.
Was a crotchety old lady. She's like, you know what I want to talk to you about? I want to talk to you about that terrier down the street who barks. And all of a sudden you're on this wild goose chase of what she thinks you should buy in terms of stocks. And she didn't know any more now that she's dead than when she was alive. So we really want to be careful about who we speak to in the spirit world. And if you learn to speak to your spirit will in time bring you guides. And it's sort of like the chaperone. Your spirit will bring you a guide and say, this is a guide who can help you on this topic of coaching you about work, or this is a guide who can talk to you about developing your mediumship abilities, or this is a guide for who could be a great health coach. But in the meantime, your spirit will be the translator. She will talk to all the guides that are assigned to you and bring you that information. And it's why people say, my spirit knows everything. And I'm like, well, probably not everything, but whatever she doesn't know, she can get that information and bring it to you.
Definitely.
So many of my students have been channeling or talking to their spirit for 10, 15 years. And they say, I've never gone any further than my spirit. She brings me all the information I need, right? And so that's great. That works absolutely great. And so your spirit absolutely could bring you any information on a great homeopathic remedy for you, or flower essences for you, or herbs or supplements. I teach, you know, my students to do supplement checks where they put a supplement in front of them and ask their spirit yes or no, how much to take. Mm-hmm. That's just so handy, right? I'm into the really practical nitty-gritty of things. Yeah. Airy fairy's nice. I need practical. Should I buy that vitamin C? So having that clear intention that you want to speak to your spirit and your spirit only, or anybody that is spirit approved, that's going to keep you safe.
Definitely. Because I think people have this feeling like, oh, I can't, you know, necessarily trust my inner voice. I need to go to some higher level spirit for answers, you know, and have them guide my every step, instead of me really trusting that I have that same, you know, knowledge within myself. Like the answers are accessible. It's just listening and then trusting the information that you're receiving.
Yeah. And when people say, well, I didn't get the right answer, it's because our ego, our conscious mind, tries to be oh so helpful and jumps in there. I bet it's this. I bet you should take vitamin B, shouldn't you? Right? And jumps in. And until you learn to distinguish which is your spirit and which is your ego mind, you are going to make mistakes. But I always say it's like learning to speak a foreign language. If you're willing to just kind of gobbledygook it for a little bit and play around with it, and you're willing to make mistakes, you're going to learn much faster than if you're trying to do it perfect from the get-go.
Exactly. And what about people who feel as if, okay, I'm not a physician, I don't have that medical background. I'm not a nurse. How is spirit going to still get me the answers that I need if I'm not even familiar with basic like medical terminology or
That's a great question.
you know what
And
I mean?
when I first discovered these abilities, then somebody said, "Oh, you're a medical intuitive." And I'm like, "Huh, I guess I am getting a lot of medical information." And at that point, there was one medical intuitive that was known out there, and that was Carolyn Mace. And she had written the book, Anatomy of the Spirit. And in that, she talks about as soon as she started getting information, she went and took an anatomy class at a med school. So I'm like, I'm doing the same thing. And I go sign up for the nearest med school. And my spirit said, no, don't do that. I'm like, that seems unwise. Seems like I should know what body part I'm talking about. And my spirit said no, because the more you know on a conscious level, the more your ego mind's going to jump in and try to give the answer. Oh, I bet that's allergic dermatitis. I bet that's what, right? Like the person in nursing school who thinks she has every disease as soon as she learns about it. And so my spirit said, I'm going to speak to you in metaphors and analogies, and you're going to get it. And I do. I get it. I mean, I will say, like, now I will see an image that she shows me for a slight hairline fracture and a break, right? And so I develop a shorthand with my spirit where she shows me certain things. And it doesn't have to be literal. There's a symbol she shows me for virus and a certain symbol she shows me for bacteria. And I've taught my students to do the same thing. And they're like, oh, I get a V for virus and a B for bacteria. Others get a snowflake pattern for one. And so everybody develops a shorthand with their spirit. It doesn't have to be anatomically correct. It just has to give you the information you need to go, I need to get a cast on this foot, or I need to go get an antibiotic because there's so much bacteria in my lungs, right? You need the information that you need, and your spirit will sometimes a client will connect to me and I'll hear, go to the doctor. And they're like, wow, I'm just hearing go to the doctor. And they're like, you're right. It was this weird little thing that was embedded in my finger and they had to dig it out. And I'm like, I wasn't gonna get all that. I'd go to the doctor. So, some little piece of guitar string that got embedded in his finger and it got infected. And I just said, heard foreign body, go to the doctor. So he went and got it taken out and flushed out. And then I could use energy to heal up the wound and it worked great. But your spirit will tell you, like, this is above your pay grade. Go, don't try to do surgery on yourself, go to the doctor. Or this is emotion based, and here are the things you need to look at.
I love that. And one thing that you pointed out, which I tell people too, because when people think, okay, I'm going to work with my spirit and I need to converse with my spirit, the language is going to be, these long paragraphs of information, but rather it's symbolic most of the time.
When I early on, my spirit said, I'm going to bring you. You're going to smell cigarette smoke, and that means their lungs are compromised. It doesn't mean the person's a smoker. It means the lungs are compromised. Then you start asking questions from there. So when I'm putting energy in somebody, even if it's long distance, and I smell this whiff of cigarette smoke, then I start asking questions. Are the bronchially constricted? Is this happening? Is there fluid in the, right? Then I can ask questions, but I might have missed as I was putting energy in the person. Oh, the lungs feel a little heavy or something's off there. So there's a shorthand that develops that steers you into what you need to know.
Yes, and many people need to hear this because sometimes they dismiss the symbols that they're seeing. It's like, no, that's the message. That's what you need to see. So they're giving you information in the easiest and fastest way possible.
Exactly. It's a shorthand, and I'm not a good example in some ways, because when people have had a session with me or they've seen me channel, one of my classes, I'll get a paragraph download and they think that's what it is. But for years and years, I would get one word or one phrase, and that we'd have a whole hour-long conversation about that one phrase. It would spur them to remember something. Then I'd share some teaching that I had learned earlier or something I'd read in a book, and that was our whole conversation. You don't have to channel all the information. It's just sometimes you get these keywords dropped into your consciousness and you share them with yourself or the person you're channeling for, and you're off and running, right?
Definitely. I want to talk about your book, Ask Your Spirit, Receiving Life-Changing Wisdom from Your Elevated intelligence. Tell us a little bit about the impetus for writing this book.
So the impetus for writing the book was that I opened up for private sessions and in 45 minutes booked out for the year. And I'm like, well, that's not sustainable. So my poor customer service part of my team, they were like, we're getting like 100 emails of people who are upset. I'm like, okay, we got to do this different. So the goal of the book is to teach people how to hear their spirit to put myself out of business. Like, I'm like, this isn't sustainable. You guys don't need me. And I always say, think of this like basketball. And if I'm Michael Jordan, I don't need to make you into Michael Jordan. But if you come to, I sent my son to Michael Jordan basketball camp. He came back with a hell of a shot, right? And he was the star of his basketball team. He did not get drafted by the NBA.
Right.
But he still to this day plays, can play pickup basketball, have a wonderful time. It improved his game substantially. And so I don't need to make you into mini me. I need to make you self-sufficient for yourself so you don't need me. And that's what the book is. It is step-by-step instructions. I say it's the equivalent of giving your spirit cell phone number. It's how you make the connection to your spirit, how you ask questions, why your spirit will answer some questions and not others, and how to phrase them on different topics. So the first part of the book is the step-by-step how to connect to your spirit. The second two-thirds of the book I call your relationship manual. This relationship with your spirit, what are the rules? How do you ask questions? How do you hold yourself open? How do you double check your answers? And then I go chapter by chapter of like how to ask questions about your friends, about your kids, about your partner, about your parents as they age, different topics that and your relationship with yourself, how you can kind of reprogram some of your self-talk. All of that is covered in each chapter.
So something you just said, like asking questions about, let's say, an aging family member who's ill or suffering from some sort of condition. Are there any rules? So for example, if I wanted to know about my mother's health, would there be a blocker between me and my ability to access like information about their health?
Yeah. So I always say, I can't connect to, if you and I were having a session, I can't connect to your mother's spirit because I don't have her permission. And to me, that's just having integrity. But I can, but your spirit and your mom's spirit are in constant communication. So I can ask your spirit, what should we know about your mom? And then she will have a wealth of information about, you know, your mom is really denying the fact that she's having trouble walking. Her balance is really not so great. And she's trying to hide that, right? Some things that you can do to help her, but keep her pride still intact. And those sorts of things that help people along. And that's, I think, really important. What we can't always get is like, okay, but how much longer does my dad have?
Yeah.
Right. God, he just seems like he's hanging out. He doesn't have great quality of life. I almost wish for him, he'd just go, can my spirit tell me, you know, what week he'll pass? And they're like, no, that's just your curiosity. That's not a question that honors anybody to know. That's just our own curiosity. And we usually can't get those future-based questions that are just our curiosity.
Yes, and that's a good point because many people think that you can. You're entitled to that type of information.
But if it's critical. So I've number of times have said to people, you know, just in the midst of a session, where does your dad live? Where does your mom live? And like, oh, you know, it's a 4-hour flight. And, you know, I'm going to go next month. I'm like, I think you should go this weekend. Mm-hmm. And they book a flight and the parent passes the next weekend. Right. Mm-hmm. So if it's something critical like that, you'll get the nudge. Right. Likewise, I had a client recently who said, I really feel like I'm complete with my mom. And I said, I do too. And your spirit is saying, like, there's nothing unsaid. Like, you know how she feels about you. And she says, but I'm going in 2 weeks. Should I go sooner? And I said, no, your spirit is saying no. And her mom passed right before she got there. And she said, well, why would my spirit tell me to go earlier? I said, remember the conversation where your spirit said, you're complete. Your sister needed to be the one who was there. And then you got in the next day to support your sister. That was what honored every person. Wow. Right? Just because you thought I should be there because it looks like the, you know, the Hallmark moment.
Yeah.
It was actually what honors each person, right? And what's in everyone's highest good, and your sister needed to be there. So if we can pay attention to the nudges, we're where we're supposed to be when we're supposed to be there.
Yeah. So Christine, it's been lovely to have you here. You're like a wealth of information. You have a lot of experience, and I'm going to say, if anybody wants to connect and find you, you know, you're probably booked out.
I'm setting it up differently now. Starting, you know, in the spring and summer, I'm going to have monthly classes and things that are unlimited of who can join, so that I can help a lot of people. So yeah, so please go check out my website and follow me on social media. You'll see the things that are being offered, and I'd love to work with people. I just want to teach everybody had to do it for themselves.
That's awesome. And her book, everybody, is Ask Your Spirit, Receiving Life-Changing Wisdom from Your Elevated Intelligence. Christine, it has been wonderful. I feel like I've learned a lot today too. So
oh, good.
And I'm signing up. So you'll see my face again for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And everybody take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.